Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insiders, January 18th, Thursday. And we have a full crew today. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley, John Bryce, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, John Bryce also with Football Scoop. And it's a big day this weekend. It's a big weekend for Notre Dame, Junior Day. I'm not good about, you know, as it pertains to this is the best ever or this compared to that group. All I know is when I look at this list of Junior Day guys coming in, not only the 12 players, I believe it's 12 out of 14 that are verbally committed to Notre Dame, but the ones that are visiting with Notre Dame has a shot at, this is a really big group. This is a testament to Marcus Freeman's work and the work of the coaching staff.
Yeah, I would say that this is a direct reflection of the emphasis Marcus Freeman has placed on recruiting, even all the way back to 21 when he was Notre Dame's defensive coordinator and he started changing the way that Notre Dame approached defensive recruiting. This is just further manifestation of Marcus's emphasis on recruiting and recruiting earlier and getting guys to campus earlier. It's Marcus and Chad Bowden working hand in hand on all of this and then deploying from there. But this doesn't happen by accident. And this is frankly, to your point, Tim, they've gotten better and better each year under Marcus Freeman. This is the latest culmination of that because it's been intentional and it's been so long going. And this is a staff that's really adept at building and fostering and maintaining relationships. And when you can get this many kids to come to South Bend and it's not been above freezing in over a week, that tells you the strength of the relationships.
I think it'd be a good, my point was going to be that getting them in early and getting on it and none of that scrambling at the end is what's kind of key at this, that you see the change from Freeman. To the point last year where I ended up liking some of the three-star guys, but they got in really early on some guys that I would have thought you could have extended out. But when you start going down the film and you think, well, that's their personal preference and I can kind of see it there. We've talked about that in the past, Tim, when we tried to review this past actual class, like there were more, I'm talking about 24 and I'm not 25 because it's a little different in 25. There were more quote unquote sleepers that have to hit in 24. And I think you're getting ahead of that game a little bit in 25.
Yeah, among the players that are verbally committed that will be arriving this weekend, Ivan Taylor, the safety, he's sensational. Quarterback Deuce Knight, defensive lineman C.J. May, which is a little bit iffy as far as his total commitment to Notre Dame. But I really like defensive end Chris Burgess Jr. Really like offensive tackle Will Black. There's cornerback Cree Thomas coming in town. And then some of these other guys, I mean, cornerback Dallas Golden, cornerback Mark Zachary the fourth. I think offensive tackle Jack Lang is sensational. So is edge Damian Shanklin. I'm not sure that McCutcheon's making it in. That might be a late scratch. Some other people there, but Pete, you're a little bit familiar with Owen Strebig from Wisconsin. There's a story out this week that was pretty interesting on him. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, my colleague Jesse Temple at The Athletic went up and visited him. And I mean, the recruiting coordinator there flat out told him the kid who's going to Notre Dame in Wisconsin is essentially hanging on and trying to get back in it with a new offensive line coach. So Notre Dame may get to a point on it with offensive line recruiting this class where they turn somebody down who's really, really good, which is a healthy place to be. And I'd say, you know, just from the organizational standpoint, it's like, if you get ahead on 23, it gives you a chance to get ahead on 24. And then when you get ahead on 24, it gives you a chance to be ahead on 25. So that's sort of where they are right now. You know, they've had the number one class at some point, each of the last three cycles. They're not going to finish number one, but if you get your work done early and find players that fit Notre Dame. I talked to Nate Kia about this, the father of Ko'o and Kahanu this week. I said, like, why do you think Notre Dame is number one in the country with commitments this early, 3 years in a row? And he's just like, I think people that look at Notre Dame, because it's so different than anything else, it's easier to figure out, all right, I like Notre Dame more than I would like Michigan or Texas or Georgia or USC, whereas if you're looking at those other schools, they may seem more similar. So I think that the staff has done a good job very quickly figuring out who fits here, who doesn't. Let's focus on the guys that do, and not try to overextend ourselves. And that's how you end up with few decommitments and a really nice organizational process.
Pete, were you saying you would have to turn down talented offensive linemen after getting to five?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. Possible. That's fine. You can't turn down a talented offensive lineman if he makes number five, though. You just
no.
You find a way to do something different than he's on the team. That's
there
the
will
way
be a surprise of a kid who maybe is like, oh, you know what? I think I want to stay closer to home. And that always happens.
Right.
But there's just the offensive line board, and they've had many very healthy looking offensive line boards over the last 10, 12 years. This is another one of those.
Yeah, it is. And I tell you what, I think most college football fans remember the name Plaxico Burress. His son, Elijah Burress, is expected to be in town this weekend, and he's still just kind of growing into his body. But I think his ceiling is really, really massive. Yeah, Tim.
His dad just scored again on Notre Dame.
Plaxico. He may have. He may have. Again. You know, Pete, you mentioned Nate Kia and his two kids. And I think we have a question somewhere about some of these guys from Hawaii, the way they're rated. I mean, Ko Kia is 569. You've got to be kidding me. And I don't know if it's because of the mission, which he may not take. I don't know, Pete, if you talked to
about that. I asked the dad. He said that Kahanu and Ko are wired very differently. Kahanu knew that he wanted to take a mission way before he committed to Notre Dame, and Ko does not. That's not to say he won't, but that's not where his mind has
been. And so Kahanu is back, and we've seen in the past they're going on a mission. It's like, oh, he's never going to show up again. So here Kahanu is going to. So he actually is going to. So there's now a renewed faith in the ability. Okay, you get this guy, and maybe usually they go on their mission first, right? And then whereas Kahanu played a year and then left. But I mean, I think he's a heck of a prospect, whether you play him at linebacker. He did a lot of stuff off the edge. He was outstanding on special teams. And I think Ko is shot out of a cannon when you watch his kid. So those two are really exciting. And I wanted to start with the junior day, because as I look at this, and guys like, Tom Loy and Kevin Sinclair can speak to it better than I can or we can, but man, this is a good group coming in. Now, a couple days ago, it was announced that Pete Bavakwa will be taking over duties on April 1st. Did I get that right? Am I saying that right? April 1st, right,
yeah,
JB?
Probably that's right. Yeah, April 1st.
And Jax Horbrook will become AD Emeritus here shortly thereafter, or right around there. And it was a bit of an unusual crowning for him ahead of time. But like JB, you were talking about getting ahead of, or to Pete, you were talking about getting ahead of the game in recruiting. They got ahead of the replacement for Jack Swarbrick. And I think it's been good. I've gotten to know Bavakwa a little bit. I haven't had a one-on-one interview with him. I'm sure Pete, you have, and JB maybe as well. But I just think that Notre Dame did the right thing here in finding their man, getting him a quote internship with the position at Notre Dame. And now he's got a much better chance of hitting the ground running on April 1st.
I was just going to interject. I love the way it was handled. I mean, it's a unique situation because Swarbrick was so in there long enough to be ensconced and everything. And I think that was the proper way of doing it, but I wasn't going to use the word internship, but Tim, that's part of it. I mean, he can actually hit the ground running because he's been hitting the ground. He's on the ground. So it's, he should be running by now.
Yeah, talking to some coach outside of football, talking to coaches at Notre Dame, they've been impressed with him. And I'm talking about Olympic sport coaches where maybe the attention, it doesn't automatically go there if you're a new AD, because you're like, I got to get football right. And then I got to get basketball. Well, I'm talking to coaches who are in Olympic sports who are a little bit more off the grid. They've been impressed with Bavakwa so far. So I think that it's a good, it will be a shot of energy, I think, into the department to have some new leadership there. And I have not talked to anyone who's met Bavakwa who's not been impressed by him.
Yeah, and I would merely add along those lines, Pete, you're right. Their energy, I think, is the word that I keep hearing the most from coaches across multiple sports. There's an excitement there for Pete's enthusiasm that he has for all the sports, seemingly, not just football or men's and women's basketball or what have you. There's a genuine excitement there, and there's excitement around the campus that he's going to bring a new dynamic to fundraising, a bit more open to the fundraising elements of the job, and that's something that they feel he's going to be well-versed in. Certainly his background, not only in the world of television, but in sports agency and representation, gives him some unique perspective. So yeah, I think excitement is the term that I hear from overwhelmingly to describe Pete and the onset of the Pete Bevacqua era at Notre Dame.
Yeah, let's go ahead and swallow that question we had in segment two from Terry Benedict about Jack Swarbrick. Did many great things for Notre Dame, its sports teams in the surrounding area. Moving forward, in what areas of the school can you see Pete Bevacqua improving? And that is it exactly, fundraising. That means NIL. That way they could spend $1 billion on players to make everybody happy and get Caleb Downs and every high-priced player out there. Notre Dame should spend more money than every single college in college football. I'm being a jerk, but anyway, I think, right, Pete, I mean, that's an area where things should really pick up for Notre Dame.
But I mean, Bevacqua's, whether you want to call it a bedside manner or ability just to relate to people, is unique. And I think that will show in fundraising. Like, when you are going to write a check to Notre Dame, you want to be convinced and someone to tell you a story about why you should do it. I think Bevacqua as a storyteller will be phenomenal. And I think his ability to relate to people and just be a kind of a normal guy and yet the athletic director of Notre Dame is going to be pretty powerful with a lot of these people who want, you know, kind of more of a personal connection. I think Bevacqua will deliver that.
I was pretty excited about the first $1 billion quarterback coming to Notre Dame when Tim was talking there, but that's, I guess there's going to have to be $1 million quarterbacks from now on.
But putting it in realistic terms, I mean, you can't just spend more than everybody and expect to have a level of chemistry within your team. You know, I mean, there's a fine line there. There's a balancing act and just outbidding people to come to Notre Dame and then them not actually being a fit and only coming to Notre Dame because they got more money than somebody else is willing to offer them is outrageous. And first of all, Notre Dame's not going to outbid everybody in the country. Yeah, JB.
No, I was just going to say this actually ties back in to our opening of this podcast on the junior day, maybe an element we didn't touch on enough. These junior days have proved critical for how Notre Dame holds its classes together under Marcus Freeman. And when you look at this similar weekend a year ago, three of the headliners for the Notre Dame junior day were CJ Carr, Aeneas Williams, and Cam. And so when you look at those three centerpiece recruits on your 2024 signing class from offense, well, this January weekend a year ago, they were on campus for a Notre Dame junior day, and Notre Dame ended up not losing any decommitments as the 2024 class went down to the wire and Notre Dame wrapped its work on that group. So I think that, again, that ties back to the importance of the junior days is a further extension of the culture that Marcus Freeman has worked so hard to create in his program and that unity. And that also is why Notre Dame is so selective in the transfer portal, among other reasons.
It's we try to explain that Notre Dame is a different culture than other places, and that just goes unheeded many times. But if you've been in and around the program and the school the way all of us have been, you have to account for the fact that Notre Dame's different. People don't want to hear that, but it's different. It's a different environment. It's unique, and it requires a special kind of treatment that doesn't match state schools. It never has, and it never will. I want to wrap up this segment with a little project that O'Malley and I worked on, the top 50 players of the year. It's fun to do. You get down to the bottom 10, or I should say the top 10, and you start to realize, and I wrote about this in today's Thursday Thoughts, man, it's really difficult to lose three times when you look at the top 15 players in this program in 2023.
Yeah, I think you could. There's two quick ways of explaining how. We had the same top 10, but only one guy in the same spot for listeners, JB and Pete. We had the same 10 people, but they were all, we had them all kind of intertwined. Thomas Harper was our number 10 for both of us. And our number 11 is the reason I think Notre Dame could have lost three games, because it was the same guy as well, and it was Sam Hartman. And he makes the third offensive player on the list when you get to number 11. So I can narrow down exactly what helped them lose at least one extra game of that group, but I would say it was the Clemson game and perhaps, and the Louisville game is, I put Ohio State in a totally different category of like, that's just one team won, one team lost. I don't blame the offense. I don't blame anything. I blame the offense on the Clemson and Louisville games.
And so let me just insert and Pete and JB jump in here then. I mean, here's the top 15, and think about how productive they were. And we can talk about Sam Hartman, whatever, but 15 on down: Chris Tyree, Maris Leofau, Jack Kaiser, Mitchell Evans, Sam Hartman, Thomas Harper, JD Bertrand, Riley Mills, Cam Hart, Benjamin Morrison, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, Xavier Watts, Howard Cross, Audric Estime, Joe Alt. Good God.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good group. I would agree with O'Malley that Hartman's not being in the top 10 is significant of why they went 9-3. I would say Blake Fisher not being in the top 15 would also be
pretty significant. Him 15, but that's, I had, he was 6. He was 16, but I agree.
He needed to be a top 10 player, yes. No doubt.
He did. And I had him there in the preseason, close. And I was wrong. I think I wrote that in Monday Musings. I was wrong on that one.
I think JJB overachieved. He was phenomenal. But I think you needed Blake Fisher and Sam Hartman to be like surefire top 10 guys. And if they were, I think we'd be talking about Notre Dame having been in a New Year's Six game and not the Sun Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, you figured Thomas Harper and JD Bertrand can be 11 and 12, and you're absolutely totally fine if Sam Hartman's 4 and Fisher's 6. Like that's a better setup.
All right. We're going to be back with segment 2, burning up the boards right after this.
Welcome back to segment 2, Burning Up the Boards. Our first is from ND Dan 106. Junior Day coverage has been great. Seems like a lot of hype. What are some reasonable expectations for fans following the visits, particularly when ND already has so many commits in the 2025 class?
Yeah, there is a lot of hype, and it's directly related to all the things that we said in the first segment, that it's a really good group. But, you know, I mean, I Tom Loy and Kevin Sinclair in a better position to predict, but I think some of the guys that have shown a pretty strong lean towards Notre Dame, the first one that I would say would be Jack Lang, the offensive tackle, who I think is sensational, and he really hasn't played a whole lot of football. What he's shown is just natural athletic and football instincts, which is really pretty phenomenal, I think, at this stage of his actual playing career. And then I think Damian Shanklin is a guy that's shown a lot of interest in Notre Dame, and I love his game almost equally on the other side of the football. Dallas Golden, I think that he jumped on board to be involved in this junior day pretty quickly. I think Elijah Burris did as well. Manny Augustin, everybody loves Matty Augustin. I get that. I think he needs to bend at the knees a little bit more, because he's just kind of overpowering people in more of an upright position. But he's a quality player and somebody that they would absolutely like among their 4 or 5 offensive linemen. So those are some of the guys that I think they had that they could come away with this weekend. All 5, probably not, but I think those are some of the guys that I put top of the list.
I like the question, because I think I tried to touch on it there at the beginning. Like when you're this far ahead, it's okay if the hype's around those guys and you don't get every single one of them, because you've done a good job already too. But you obviously have to close. As Pete said, you won't finish number 1, but you got to close better, I think, than you've closed in the previous seasons.
No, that's a good point, because I wrote about in Thursday Thoughts, Tim, that the list is so good that you're going to be disappointed when most of them don't choose Notre Dame. But it's a really good list.
I put the wrong inflection in hype, but I meant it that way. Yeah. You can't really get all these guys. But
I'm going to ask the next question for Tim O'Malley, and it's from M. Busher 96. Was the 2023 season like the 1992 season? Lots of talent, great stats, somewhat disappointing. Does that mean the 2024 season would be like my favorite, the 1993 team?
That would be interesting. Just to very quickly, because I take exception to things like this, offends my delicate sensibilities when it happens. I like the theme of the question. A lot of talent, great stats, disappointing with three losses, because as Tim, you pointed out, there should not have been three losses. The 1992 team should not have had any losses. And when you talk to Rick Meyer and Reggie Brooks about that team, which I did, the first thing, I think it was Rick said it about Reggie, the first thing Rick said was, I sent him a text, I want to talk about this team. He's like, man, that team was good. That's the best one. And if you look, I want to give you some numbers, okay? 2, 10, 17, 20, 34, 45, 7, 16, and 27. Those are the next 2 years' drafts where Notre Dame players were taken in the draft.
Wow.
2, 7, 10, 16, 17, 20, 27, 34, 45. And that doesn't even include like six more. You could get to 65. 65 is where we're saying, like, I don't know, maybe he can go on day three or going to day three. That all those guys for Notre Dame were taken. That was talent. And Michigan, if you want to tie Michigan, I get it. It's fine. Michigan probably, if you did a list with Michigan, they would probably have 10 guys in this draft too. So that's fine.
I would say like last year's Stanford team reminded me more of 2006, right?
Yes. That's the year 2006.
Yeah. And a year later they play Georgia Tech. Next year, Notre Dame plays Georgia Tech as well. So it's, you know, draw your own conclusions.
I obviously I covered the 92 season and I've always contended that I don't know if Notre Dame was the best team in the country, but they were right there at the top of that list when that season ended.
That playoff would have been the best ever because Alabama was undefeated and beat undefeated Miami. That was a defending co-champ, and Notre Dame was just as good as either one of them at the end of the year. That would have been an amazing playoff.
That could probably be an own podcast of itself, just to look at what the 1990s playoffs could have been. Even a four-team playoff through the 90s would have had some magnificent ones. And certainly some of those Notre Dame teams would have been right there in the four, along with a couple of times that Steve Spurrier just owned Tennessee and Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning never got to play for a title really. So there would have been some compelling, like that old Florida Notre Dame Sugar Bowl. Imagine that being a playoff game.
You know why Peyton Manning came back for a fourth year, right, John?
Why is that, T.O.?
To be the only four-time MVP of the Citrus Bowl. That was Steve Spurrier's line on Peyton Manning.
Oh, ouch. Nobody had barbs quite like Steve Spurrier. No. He had him at the, well, maybe Lou Holtz, but Spurrier definitely had him. Man, think, how about that? How about those two personalities in the Sugar Bowl? I was at that game. Of course, that was an awesome game, a real statement game by Notre Dame that year. Question from ND Fan 08. Over under number of times Notre Dame makes the 12-team playoff in the next five seasons. ND Fan 08 sets that over under at 2.5. Ouch.
Yes, that'd be a good line.
That's a great one. I fully expect one coming up because of the schedule helps. So I will say over to that number, but you're not going to like my next answer.
You'll say over to 2.5. You think Notre Dame gets three playoff bids in the next 5 years?
3 out of 12, but I say under to the number of wins.
I didn't ask that question yet.
Okay. Well, I'll ruin it for people.
The second question was number of wins in the playoffs for Notre Dame over the next five seasons. And again, Indy Fan 08 set it at that at 3.5.
I mean, we talk about how it's a big failure if they don't make the 12-team playoff next year with the defense they have coming back and then Riley Leonard. So that means they got to make 2 out of 4. That's how I'm looking at it.
I will, I'll take the under on the 2.5 question. I think Notre Dame will make it twice in the next 5 years. I'll take the over and think that Notre Dame will notch 4 wins along the way. So, there you go. I'm going under.
I'm going to agree with John on this one. But I don't have a lot of conviction on what happens in 2026.
Yeah.
Well, that's
the beauty of this.
Yeah. We are frequently asked questions about the starting quarterback in 2025 before we've even had spring practice of 2024.
You know, it would be great, Tim, is if they made it under 2.5 times, but won 5 games.
Well, that, yes, that would be salve for the wound, because if we're saying that they definitely, and I'm saying it, they definitely should make the playoffs in 2024. I think they should be a preseason. I don't know everybody. I don't know all the teams. So now I'm doing right. What I don't like, but when I see what is coming back for Notre Dame, I think that's a top 5, top 7 team in the country. I could be wrong there, but 2.5, if we're saying that they're definitely going to make the playoffs this year, that would be if you're saying under 2.5, that would be right. One of the next 4 years, which would be, we'd have to shut the site down, for crying out loud.
All I'm saying is, you need 5 wins.
You can throw away your way too early top 25s, but just for the sake of discussion, Stu Mandel at The Athletic came out with his way too early top 25. He's got Notre Dame at number 9, which I think pretty reasonable. You could argue maybe they should be 7, maybe it should be 10. But if they're 9, the way this breaks down, they would open the college football playoff on the road in Columbus. Hard place to win. It's a hard place to get that first playoff win in a season that we think Notre Dame should definitely make the playoff.
That's why my under is always in the playoffs, is under, because you have to beat those teams. You're not getting your revenge big win against Louisville and beating Florida State.
You got to figure out a way to beat Liberty in the first round at home.
Yeah, exactly. Like my forecast is based strictly on Notre Dame being the 5 or the 6 and getting a couple of home games.
Yeah, you don't like the Columbus.
Yeah. I'm not extrapolating into winning on the road and then reeling off some Braves 2021 wild card run to the World Series. We're not talking that crap. No, sir.
Hey, Bryce didn't like that Columbus matchup you pulled out there, Pete. That's not as cool.
Let me jump ahead to the question from Irish Gambler, which is pertinent to this. I should have had this back-to-back with it, but some folks have Texas A&M, Florida State, Louisville, and USC in the top 10 for transfer additions. Does that change how you view the 24 schedule?
It doesn't change it,
but yeah, I had those teams as the 4 harder ones anyway. So
I know, but the point is that if they're in the top 10 in transfer additions, they're that much more difficult.
Well, but that's just transfer additions. That doesn't mean they suddenly have a top 10 roster, in my opinion. That just means they've been rated as among the 10 best free agency classes.
Right, but you would agree those are Notre Dame's 4 toughest games.
For sure, I would agree. And I think it's much tougher for Notre Dame to open at A&M now with Mike Elko, because you're going to have a complete culture change. But you also can't overlook the fact that A&M is now rated as one of the top 10 best classes in transfers, but they also lost, 22 guys
off
the pass roster to the portal, not to mention some guys that have declared for the NFL. So it's going to be a hard game. It was always going to be a hard game. I think it's made a little tougher with the arrival of Mike Elko. I still think, standing here today, Notre Dame has a better team.
Yeah, I mean, look, Notre Dame is probably A&M's toughest game too. So, I think we always talk about like, oh, this is a tough game for Notre Dame. Well, it's a tough game for the team they're playing too. Florida State and Louisville, they're at home. You just have to win those games.
They have to be
got to win.
It's a totally different conversation if they can't beat those teams at home. That's ridiculous.
This absolutely should be a undefeated home schedule.
Yeah.
You've got problems.
Yeah. For the sake of reference, last year's top 10, and one's kind of a throwaway because it was Colorado, obviously, by numbers. Colorado, Ole Miss, USC, and Auburn were the top 4. Ole Miss is the best team there. The next 4 were LSU, Florida State, Miami, and UCLA. Florida State is clearly and deservedly the best team there, and boy, did they use the portal to their advantage. And then you had Oklahoma, Oregon, Arkansas, and Louisville, and I bring that up because Louisville's transfers had a good day against Notre Dame, though.
Yeah.
John, what were you going to add?
I was just going to say, not only are the Florida State and Louisville games obviously here in South Bend, but I don't think either of those teams is going to be as good next year as it was this year. And I realize what Jeff Brohm did was what I like to call ahead of the curve in his Louisville rebuild. And so he got some extra equity by being a 10-game winner and playing for the ACC title ahead of schedule. But there's still work to be done at Louisville. And Louisville's still not going to have a roster that matches up with Notre Dame. And I'm not convinced that Louisville or Florida State will be a 10-game winner next fall because both lose so much.
Well, were there not 29 opt-outs from Florida State for the bowl game? Now, I don't know how many of those put their name in the portal then, but they lost. I mean, at least for that game, they lost, 35, I don't know, whatever percent of their roster. And I don't know how many of those guys transferred, but
would you guys agree as it directly affects Notre Dame next year, the transfer portal, the biggest change is Mike Elko, is it Texas A&M?
Yeah.
It's not like Caleb Williams went to USC again. You know, that was clearly the biggest one that ever affected Notre Dame was Caleb Williams.
USC hired a real defensive coordinator. I couldn't believe it. I was watching a bowl game and USC was tackling. I couldn't believe it. They were so awful under Alex Grinch. And yet, seriously, you guys at least saw some of that bowl game, right? When we were in El Paso, that it was striking how much better of a tackling team the USC was in their bowl game.
Didn't A&M go after your favorite defensive coordinator, Tim?
Jay Bateman?
Yeah.
Jay Bateman. Maybe I'm wrong here, but thank you, Mike Elko, for hiring Jay Bateman.
Unfortunately, Mike Elko still is on the staff.
Yeah, that's too bad.
And I don't think Elko is done adding to his defensive staff. There may be news on that coming within the day. Okay. So he's still out there trying to make some big moves.
If there's anybody that would know that, it'd be JB in football. Moving on to the next question, that is from Port ND. It's crazy to think the number of coaches who no longer coach college football, with Jim Harbaugh most likely gone and Nick Saban now retired. Who'd you now rank as your top five college football head coaches? Also, where would you place Freeman on that list despite such a small sample size? Are we talking about top five? I don't think Marcus Freeman's making.
No, he's asking where you might get Freeman.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, I mean, Dabo.
Kirby Smart is one.
Yeah, Kirby Smart is one. And Dabo is two.
I would have BK up there. I think
I would too.
Third though, right? Not ahead of Dabo. He's
in the top five. No, not ahead of Dabo. No. He's never won a national title. But I think BK is maybe his best strength is his ability to be CEO. That's my opinion. And I've talked to coaches around who have worked for him or faced him. And they talk about he has grown to let the coaches do their job and truly take an overseer approach. So I think Kirby's a unanimous number one with the changing of things. Dabo makes a lot of sense at number two. I've got BK in there. Beyond that, it gets
Where do you have Lanning?
Lanning is sample size for me. There's not enough.
Yeah,
not enough sample size as you
DeBoer,
sit and look at.
DeBoer is top five.
Like that too, DeBoer. But anybody that's 104 and 12, I don't.
Yeah, DeBoer has a sample size. It's just at some lower level places. But what he did at Washington was phenomenal. I think Lance Leipold would be up there. He would be top 10 for me.
Where's Sark?
Kyle Whittingham, Sarkisian, both Whittingham top 10 for me. Sure.
Whittingham's in my top 10.
You know, Gundy, beyond that,
I probably have Gundy in my top 10 because when has he ever had a roster that most people want to swap with?
Yeah, that's
10 games about every year.
I think Lane Kiffin might be creeping up on that
sample list. Size is too small. Oh, Lane Kiffin is too. Yeah, that's a good call.
Norvell.
Here's a good question. Last year, sample size is too small. But what if Mike Elko got the Ohio State job this offseason instead of the A&M job? Where would you think that coaching star might go?
I don't think it would change where I would rank Mike Elko right now. I just don't think there's enough sample size whatsoever. He did a nice job at Duke, and I don't want to minimize that, but he capitalized on a changing of tides within the sport in general, and then with the ACC, by and large, sucking a great deal in those 2 years.
I would still have Ryan Day in the top 10, just like he was. I think he was viewed as a top five coach a couple years ago, and no longer is the case, but I mean, he's just won too many games.
Yeah, I will say Marcus Freeman, what is it now, 8 wins in 2 years against AP-ranked opponents, the highest number in Notre Dame history through 2 years, and I think 19 wins through his first two seasons also matches the most of any Notre Dame coach in his Charlie first Weiss. 2 years. So I think Marcus Freeman, we should note to have this question revisited on this same podcast a year from now and revisit where we rank Marcus Freeman, because I think if he guides Notre Dame to the playoffs this year, he probably firmly cracks the top 10 of all of our lists.
I think he needs to win in the playoff to be a top 10 coach for me. I would say if he made the playoff and won a game, then he would be a top 20 mm-hmm. coach. Right now, the sample size is not there for me. Like, you know, somebody like Josh Heupel at Tennessee. I mean, John, you know what's going on there. Like, one great year, came back to earth big time last year. And I think, you know, he's a good coach. I think, you know, Marcus is still getting to that. Like, he's got to have one great year before we can talk about, like, great coach.
Right. Well, and that's why I say Marcus is ascending, because he went 9 wins, 10 wins, obviously. But then also some of the things he's done, the changes he's made, the willingness to make staff changes. And you bring up a great point on Heupel. He had like a 12-win year, maybe his first year at UCF, and then he stair-stepped down.
Yeah.
He had an 11-win year, two at Tennessee, and took a dramatic tumble back, and then is headed into next year with an unproven but highly regarded redshirt freshman quarterback. So, yeah, I think Josh Heupel would be considered immediately a top 10 offensive mind. I would not have him a top 10 head football coach.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
It's rare at Notre Dame that a new coach inherits the kind of program that Brian Kelly had created when Marcus Freeman was named head coach. I mean, that's a silver spoon. That's a silver spoon starting time for him.
Yeah, Bob Davey did.
Bob Davey did. There's no doubt about that. And Dan Devine did too. But Dan Devine won a national title too. So,
as you like to say, that counts, right?
That does count. Yeah. That absolutely does count. Tim, you're on the next question.
Yep. Karsten 44. This is for Tim Priester. Gerby Lambert or Jack Lang? Who are you ranking higher, Priester?
That's a good question. I like Gerby Lambert a lot. I like Gerby Lambert a lot, but I think the ceiling for Jack Lang is just a little bit higher. The great thing about this is that, especially if Jack Lang commits this weekend, I don't have to pick. They can both be on the field together for Notre Dame. I think those are two really, really good offensive tackles. They're both definitely tackles. But just the progress that Lang has made in a short amount of time really blows me away.
They're both definitely tackles is the most important thing you said as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt. You guys want to comment on that?
I was laughing internally that you said you don't have to choose, as if you never rank anything after kids.
You do.
Okay.
I'd probably go Gerby. Yeah. I would go Gerby just slightly, just because I've talked to enough people that, again, they believe there's top end potential there, like next level potential.
I had Gerby third in the class, so I at this point I would go Gerby too.
Yeah,
I had him second.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you have to.
I didn't think you ranked me. Yeah, I thought we just discussed you don't rank
them. Thank God I'm sitting down.
I rank them. It just doesn't matter what the hell I rank. that's the whole point. Question from Mav29: the current makeup of the coaching staff and the schedule both set up positively for 2024. What individual players need to step forward to maximize this opportunity?
Are we not allowed to say one of them?
I don't know what you mean by
that. Riley Leonard.
Yeah, that'd be number one.
Well, I mean, there's so many people you can
list. Let's start with him.
Let's start on the defensive side of the ball, because you've got a lot coming back there. Who do they need to step forward in order to fully maximize their opportunity?
I mean, Christian Gray, if he's as good as we think he can be, Notre Dame's defense will be absolutely lights out. Absolutely lights out defense if they have another Cam Hart situation at corner with Christian Gray.
Jaden Mickey needs to be really, he needs to be good too.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to pick an individual. I will say A rush end has to maximize somebody that rushes the quarterback, whoever, whether that's Jalen Snead, whether that's one of the other guys, whoever you want to fill in that. That to me, that position is almost as equal to Riley Leonard. Riley Leonard to me is the clear number one, that he has to take that next step that that reinforces why people believe he's a first or second day NFL draft prospect. But then the flip side of that is the defense has to have somebody that can rush the passer the way Isaiah Foskey did a couple of years ago with consistency. And JJB did it down the stretch. He was much better, but he was not Isaiah Foskey. So as we talk about Notre Dame advancing to the playoff, maybe hosting a game, having a chance to finally win a playoff game, that to me is absolutely critical. Whoever you want to identify as that person.
Leonard won. I agree with John about the pass rush and some, I mean, that could be Botello. Like if he could treat every game like a bowl game, it could be Botello.
They need Botello to really step forward.
But then it's whoever wins the nickel job is the clear number three to me. Cause in 2024, when you're playing defense, that's a starter and that is going to be a new face. It could be a transfer, could be a young player. I don't know. But
it'd be Gray.
Yeah. Just like, it could be Gray. I just feel less confident in that position than I did with Bracey or Harper the last 2 years. But if at the end, it was kind of hard. I mean, it was hard to know what Harper was going to be this time last year. He turned out to be really, really good. A top 10 performance from the nickel. That whoever that is needs to step forward.
Well, that's why I say Gray and Mickey both need to step forward, because those, you have two positions to fill. So yeah. whether one's at... It doesn't matter which one's the
corner. I wasn't going to use Mickey because I don't think he could play nickel on the way they play defense.
But Gray could. We've at least seen a great deal of those guys on the field. I would argue you go Riley Leonard, and then you go Rush. And then to me, I look at left tackle as third, whoever that is. If that's Jagasaw or whomever it is, you have to provide Riley Leonard protection. You have to have an anchor for your offensive line. I love the parts to choose from on defense, and I think we all feel there's a lot of top-end potential there. There's far more uncertainty, but optimism along the offensive line. So that would be my first three.
You can name every one of those young offensive linemen, Billy Shrouth, you know, with the fanfare that he's been given from a Howard Cross interview in December of 2022. You know, he needs to take a big step up. Pat Coogan needs to take a big step up. Ashton Craig, you know, I mean, Rocco Spindler, if he wants to get his starting spot back, the tackles, that whole offensive line. And then you can name a boatload of receivers too.
But you would just need two receivers to really step up, two linemen to get way, way better. You know what I'm like? The rush end position, the left tackle position. I kind of like a pass rusher. And if you told me the three most improved players would be Botello or Traore plus Lambert, Lambert. Kirby Lambert's already starting, plus Jagasa and Baker, I'd be like, sign me up. I'll take Jagasa, Baker, and Traore as being the three most improved players on the team.
Yeah, edges. Yeah. Either side of the ball, man. Edges.
If you said Jalen Snead, that'd be even better, because he's a junior developed player.
It could be Kahanu Kia. Who knows? You don't know. Question from Kay Beasley. All of the recent transfer portal additions from the playoff teams and teams that lost their coach leads me to ask whether the Irish settled and pursued too quickly and could have gotten higher end targets.
It's a good question, because we thought they proven right or wrong. We have no idea for months. We thought they settled quickly at nickel. But I wouldn't think they settled. I don't think they settled at the other positions, not quarterback, not strong side defensive end, not safety, not kicker. I mean, if you say settling is they stopped and didn't get that offensive tackle.
You didn't settle with Mitchell and Collins at receiver. I guess you could say that about the third receiver, but Harrison's a quality kick returner. He's got three career. You know, the only way I agree with you, Sam, I mean, pardon my voice here. They jumped too early at nickel, I think, with Jordan Clark.
I think it was overall
very, very healthy approach that they took. It's not like they took Jordan Clark because they passed on Caleb Downs, you know, like, or they didn't take Bo Collins because they passed on Isaiah Bond. These other teams, Texas and Georgia in particular, do a really nice job in the transfer portal. So there's no reason to think Notre Dame is going to win all of those any more than they would in like high school recruiting. And I think they actually have done a better job in portal recruiting than they do in high school recruiting compared to these other programs, relatively speaking. So they did a very, very good job in the portal this year. I don't think that they, if you want to like nitpick one player, that's fine. But like just as in totality, I thought they did an excellent job.
Well, and to that end, I would also point out part of the what Marcus Freeman referenced on signing day and some other times this fall, there's more communication so they know who they can get in and who they can continue to pursue in the portal. And as you go into December, campus shuts down for 2 weeks and you don't always know you can get a guy in. So you don't even know necessarily if you can recruit him, whereas an Alabama, a Georgia, a Texas, if there's a guy in the portal that they want and he's been at another program, they know they're going to get that guy into school. So I think that factors into it as well. It forces Notre Dame to be leading edge because Notre Dame both wants to be and has to be.
Would it's also fair to say that this is not the way you build your portal offseason, but Notre Dame lost four top 150 players or three top 150 players and Logan Diggs from the same class last April. There are quality players that go into the portal still, and a nickel can be in the portal. I mean, they lost Logan Diggs and three top 150 players after the spring in the same class. That's nuts. So that is going to happen everywhere as the spring concludes.
Can you imagine the outcry if at the end of December, Notre Dame had two or three grad transfers at that point? I mean, I damned if you do, damned if you don't. I like seven of the eight players that they got in the transfer portal. I'll take that. Tim, ask the last question.
Why do you have it on here? Do you have an answer for
me? Yes, there's an actual reason because
I thought this was like an old outline from like a podcast months ago.
I was wrong, and so I'm going to admit that I was wrong.
All right, here we go. From Paul Mazur, good job. Paul Mazur 6. The 2024 schedule has only 11 games. Who is going to be the 12th opponent, and when and where will the game be played? A while back, Army and Yankee Stadium was the rumor. I have not heard that rumor yet, I want to say, but I'm going to go ahead and
heard that.
No, I
haven't heard that. Haven't heard that rumor. Okay. Well, I was told that I was inaccurate in what I last said about this, and that was that there was some objection on Army's part to play the game against Notre Dame. That is not the issue. I'm told that Army, JB, you may know this, Army is definitely the opponent. And we expect resolution by the end of the month as to when and where it will be. We've said the 11th game of the season, but there are two other open dates, correct? There are two other open dates. So Army will be the opponent. And by the end of January, we'll know where and when.
I still expect it to be the 18th.
I still expect it to be that, yeah. But
yeah, the 18th of November or what it is, and in New York. There's been, I mean, unless something crazy changes, there's been site surveys and all of that. So I would expect it to be in November and the penultimate game on the schedule.
I don't know what the issue is with Yankee Stadium, but apparently it's an issue. So anyway.
All I've heard here is that we don't know where it is. So I'm just going to say it's probably at Michi Stadium.
That would be awesome.
Yes,
that would be awesome.
It would be fantastic.
You guys didn't hear the rumor that they're actually going to play it in San Diego?
Yes.
I take it back.
I'd rather go to San Diego than Michi Stadium. Yeah.
As long as we don't go back to that dump of a stadium. It doesn't exist anymore.
Disagree.
So. Oh, that's what they tore down. Okay, that's
right. I would have covered water polo in that dump of a stadium in the middle of November. That was beautiful.
The poor Notre Dame fans are trying to get in the tunnels and get in the game. They missed the first quarter. That was a disaster for them. As Charlie Weiss would say regarding San Diego, sign me up.
Yeah.
I'd be all for that. That was great. Well, we appreciate you joining us here today for Irish Illustrated Insider. We'll be back next Thursday. January 25th. Until then, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, John Bryce, Pete Sampson. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider.